No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIOPR. We have a special guest tonight, but first I've got some news. Before we go anywhere, let me say hello to Maria Sanchez. Hi, Maria. How are you?
Thank you for your compassion with me last week and time with my mother. So yeah. I stayed through and left on Monday, and on Tuesday she fell again. She re-broke her wrist. She broke three ribs. She broke her vertebrae. She's back in the hospital, and it's another nightmare. And so fortunately she's getting 24/7 care at the moment, but I'm so glad she didn't fall on my watch. It's all I can say.
Well, and you know
what? My siblings
what?
Would not have been happy. And it's an accident. You know, it can happen any time.
Yeah, and it's a terrible thing for older people. It happens time and time again. And you know, she's certainly in my prayers. And I hope everybody keeps her in their prayers.
Thank you.
We have some good news to report. There's the bad news. But the good news, first and foremost, my longtime assistant, beautiful young woman, wonderful person, Rachel Bernard, got engaged yesterday.
Oh my gosh.
So congratulations, Rachel and Ryan. I look forward to I've already put in my plug to be a bridesmaid, so we'll see what happens. But congratulations, Rachel. Couldn't happen to a nicer person. In addition to that, we have three new co-signers on the statehood bill.
You really are on a roll.
Yeah, we're up to 198 co-sponsors in both houses, which is amazing, more than any before. So let's give a shout out to Representative Panetta, California 20. The rest of the country's got a lot of work to do to catch up to California, and Representative Bustos, Illinois 17th Congressional District, and Representative Vila of Texas 34th District. And they're all Democrats, and they're wonderful people. And thank you so much for being a part of our statehood bill and our effort to become equal American citizens. We really appreciate it.
And speaking of bipartisan, Michael, my girlfriend, who I've mentioned, she's been assembly for two sessions or whatever you want to, what is your term? Two terms now, and she's up for re-election in November. And I was a volunteer at her event Friday night that was for women only. And I did the check-in. And if that isn't bipartisan, I don't know what is.
Yes,
but she's the best person for the job.
Well, and that's what you count, right?
Yeah.
And that's some of what we're going to talk about tonight is, I mean, it's a big part of tonight's show is talking about representation in the democratic process. And to help us do that, we've got a very special guest, Reverend Graylin Hagler, who's the senior pastor at Plymouth Congregational United Church of Christ. He's an amazing man. Reverend Hagler is a pastor and an activist. He was born and raised in Baltimore, received his bachelor's degree in religion from Oberlin College in Ohio, one of the best schools in the country, in 1976. Reverend Hagler is the past national president of Ministers for Racial and Social and Economic Justice. He is a longtime social justice advocate throughout the District of Columbia and beyond. He's most recently testified before the D.C. Council against the repeal of Initiative 77, the Fair Minimum Wage Act of 2017, and that is something that I also testified against. So without further delay, can we bring Reverend Hagler on?
Thank you.
Are you with us?
Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. Not in the least. You know, you're an amazing advocate, Reverend. You know, you're one of those people that just has a powerful presence, and you're a great speaker. And, you know, I think that's because you walk with God. You know, somebody that is very devout believer. And I think that some people, you know, Timothy told us to be a vessel unto the Lord. And I think that's a good description of you. So thank you for being on the show. And let's talk about Initiative 77. For people that don't know, let me explain quickly, and Reverend, correct me if I'm wrong, but Initiative 77 is an effort to raise the minimum wage of workers, servers, and people who are tip workers in the District of Columbia, and it gradually raises it to $15 an hour by 2025, I believe. And it passed overwhelmingly. It didn't just barely pass, it passed overwhelmingly. And there are a lot of people that are against it now that it's passed. Many servers were against it, and I actually voted against it because the servers I know didn't like it, but it passed. And now the City Council of the District of Columbia has legislation to overturn it, and I think that's outrageous. And I know that that Reverend Hagler has some strong beliefs. So tell me how you feel, Reverend, about this.
Well, I think it's the absolute wrong thing to do. I mean, it's just like we started out with Sweet Honey and the Rock, singing about basically give us the vote. And here we are taking the vote and throwing it away. So we're not only doing voter suppression, we're doing voter nullification. All across the country, we're decrying voter suppression that is being carried out by Republicans and by the extremist forces in this country trying to make sure that people of color can't vote and that particular communities are kept away from the polls. And we're saying that everybody should vote. And here we are in the District of Columbia, the last colony on the mainland, always talking about statehood, always talking about Congress denying us the vote. And here we are moving to nullify a vote in a city where this measure passed by 56% of the vote. Now, quite frankly, I'm at a place, I voted for it, you voted against it, that's fine. Because I'm at a place where I'm just talking about the issue of respecting the vote, period. Respecting it because we want to, one, encourage people to vote. This does not encourage people to vote. This says to people what they already believe is that their vote don't count anyway, so why go to the polls? It also begins to undermine the historical struggle. Because as I was pointing out today, even in church, I was saying, understand the nature of the country. Originally, white property owners could vote. Then it was spread out to white men could vote. And people of color and women had to struggle, had to fight to be able to go into the polling place, to be able to cast a vote. And here we are. How dare anybody try to throw it away? Because a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and people went to jail for it. Women went to jail for the right to vote. Obviously, dogs were sicked on people for the right to vote in terms of the black community. And here we are going to throw away the votes. I think it's the most reprehensible thing that I can imagine.
I agree with you. Go ahead, Maria.
Interestingly enough, thank you, Reverend, for being a guest on our program and for your passion and also your work. If this wasn't political, why is it that the Democrats in D.C. want to repeal it?
What do you mean by that, Maria?
Well, you only have Democrats representing you. And they're the ones that want to repeal it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it. Maybe the Reverend can answer that question better, but I don't get it. I don't get why they're trying to repeal it.
Well, I think there's a number of things. I mean, one is it is purely a racialized action. And when I say a racialized action, the only ward in the city to disapprove of Initiative 77 was Ward 3. I think you live there, right, Senator?
Yeah.
And there it only narrowly loses. But it's the wealthiest and the whitest ward in the city. Five overwhelmingly voted for the measure. And so basically you're going to, at this point, overturn the vote, predicating it upon one ward in the city. That's one thing. The other thing that you saw come out and you've heard from it has been basically the owners of the restaurants, who are white hipsters, many of them, the bartenders, who are definitely white young hipsters who've come into the city, some of the servers, white hipsters who have come into the city. But you have not heard from the dishwashers. You have not heard from the runners. You have not heard from the buses. You have not heard from the parking valets. You have not heard from the parking lot attendants. That are overwhelmingly people of color, and many of them immigrants, because they would benefit from what has been passed. And also there's a whole lot of misinformation that's being passed out. One is as if somehow tipping would be outlawed if we basically raise the minimum wage. We got to remember that that one thing happened is that tipping comes to America basically at emancipation. And it was basically a system that was set up to keep black folks, former slaves, in a servile and subservient position that they'd have to work for tips. FDR basically wanted to raise the tip wage to basically speak to that issue, but since it was overwhelmingly people of color, there was the argument that you could not raise them to the same minimum wage, same salary level as whites. And so it was kept at a reduced level. But FDR did link tipped wage workers to the minimum wage. Every time the minimum wage went up, tipped wage workers' salaries were to go up. It was Bill Clinton that deconnected it, delinked it, so that basically tipped wage salaries remained stagnant even while minimum wage crept up. And so this is an attempt to try to correct some past wrongs. It's also an attempt to try to address some situations that are not being addressed. I mean, for example, right now I do a whole lot of work with groups at the airport, with immigrant groups at the airport, people who are written up as tipped wage employees that are basically used, categorized in that way to be exploited. Case in point, those who push wheelchairs at the airports do not work for the airlines. They work as for vendors that write them up and classify them as tipped wage employees, and they're not even they can't even ask for a tip or they'll be fired. That's the kind of exploitation that's taking place.
Well, and that's crazy because I'm sure that most people that get pushed around in wheelchairs at the airport do not tip. I'm sure that they feel that they've spent hundreds and hundreds of dollars on an airfare and that this is part of the service provided by the airline. So I'd be surprised.
Agree.
Yeah, I would be surprised if many of them even knew that people like that were tipped workers. And that really is this is a horrible aspect of this whole thing, is the fact that not only did all the predominantly black wards of the city pass this bill, but every ward of the city passed this bill with the exception of Ward 3. Reverend Hagler's absolutely right. And to overturn a bill like this is, in my opinion, just a terrible abuse of their authority.
Is it legal?
Yes, they have the right. It's exactly like Congress. It's exactly like the way Congress treats us, which is what annoys the hell out of me, is that Congress has the right to do everything they want in the District of Columbia under the Constitution. And these guys has the power, I should say. But in my opinion, they don't have the right, because Jefferson tells us that the legitimate right to govern flows from the consent of the governed. The same thing is going on here with the city council. They have the power to do it, but I don't believe that they have the right to do it. And it's to treat us exactly the way that they complain every day that they get treated. You know, I use the quote in my testimony from Abraham Lincoln, a good Republican. who said that elections belong to the people. If they de- if they decide to turn their back on the fire and their rear ends get burned, they have to sit on their blisters. And that's what's going on here. If you believe we made the wrong choice, it doesn't matter. As far as I'm concerned, we made the choice. And if you don't like it, put something on the next, get another initiative out there.
For it to get on the ballot, it had to go through all those hoops that you have to go, right? You get the signatures, and then you get the legislation, and then you get it, all of that.
Approved by the Board of Elections. And right. Believe me, I was out there on election day, and there were plenty of people at the polls that were lobbying against passage. So to some of these people are acting like they've been blindsided, like they didn't have a chance. They were out there. They were out there in droves.
Let me tell you the argument that many people are making, particularly the city council members. They're saying, well, I advocated against it. I campaigned to vote no. And people voted yes, evidently, and they also voted for me. So since they voted for me, they must have been confused by the bill because they would have voted with me. That's the argument that they're posing, which is a ridiculous argument.
Everyone follows somebody lockstep, right?
That's right. And so they make the argument that obviously the people didn't know what they were voting for.
How insulting.
Well, and they do that all the time. I mean, you know, the Congress treats us like we're children in the same respect, saying that you know, Washington, D.C. can't run itself, which is not true. So they need to intervene to benefit the voters of the district. It's their obligation. And you know what? It under the Constitution, it is their obligation, but it's not right, and it's not right for these guys to do it. And they've done it in the past on things like term limits, you know, whatever anything affects them, all of a sudden, you know. I mean, it's crazy.
And that's particularly they're protecting economic interests. Congress is protecting economic interests that always applies its will in the District of Columbia, and right here, the city council is trying to protect economic interest that says the sky is falling. I want to point out the restaurant industry that says, oh, it's going to destroy the restaurant industry. They said the same thing about the smoking ban. They said if you pass a smoking ban in Washington, D.C. so that people cannot smoke in restaurants, all of the restaurants are going to leave because all the business is going to go to Virginia or Maryland. And so here they were screaming, the sky is falling. The sky did not fall. There's more restaurants today than ever before.
Well, and you know, when I worked, Reverend, I worked my way through college working in the garment industry. I sold clothes for a company called Breeches of Georgetown. And they made the same argument. That's why we don't have a metro system in Georgetown, because the merchants all got together and they said, look, man, you can't dig up our streets. We'll be out of business before the metro is finished because people won't be able to get to Georgetown. I think places where the metro now exists, they build department stores right outside of metro stops because it's such a boon to business. So, and I ran a small business. I understand you're always scared of every change, but that really shouldn't affect the way our legislators who are supposed to speak for the people and not for the special interests, that really shouldn't affect the way they vote, in my opinion.
In California, we're a leader in that regard, too, because we changed the minimum wage starting January 1st of last year, and it's graduated also, but it's taking longer than your initiative because it will finally reach $15 an hour on January 1st of 2023. But right now, we're at $10.50 in 2018.
Well, we're about the same. We're a little higher than that, I believe, $11 in something. But
that
it's going to take a while. And there were plenty of people, where they're not, Reverend, that testified where they've done this in places like Seattle, where it's really been a positive thing. Weren't there plenty of people there?
And you hear about California as well. The thing is that tips did not go away, that's what the service organization said. Oh, people are not going to tip me anymore. That's not true. But it also affects a larger segment of people that right now are not beneficiaries of high tips, are not beneficiaries of really advancing income. And so it's a part of addressing groups like that, and I think that's what we got to do. Now, one thing I want to point out, because you asked the question of sort of like why would they do this, and, you know, I hate to throw dispersions, but I have to call it like it is. In this last campaign cycle, the chairperson of the city council took $30,000 from those interest groups that wanted to oppose Initiative 77. And in the last two election cycles, $233,000 were distributed to elected officials for them to oppose Initiative 77. Well, the problem is once you accept that money and you can't deliver, then you got to figure out how you're going to deliver to save face. People, they made their arguments. The chairperson was out there and talked against Initiative 77. The mayor, all these other folks who ran for office, and people still voted for it as a statement that people are independent thinkers and they weren't bought.
Well, and you know what? I've run for office many, many times. Now, I don't get big campaign contributions, but when I worked at the DNC, I was in charge of FEC compliance, and I saw them come in all the time. And I can tell you something. Somebody sends you a check for $5,000, they call you on, well, I think it's $2,000 is a max, but they bundle contributions. Somebody sends you a check for $2,000, they call you on the phone, you answer the phone. You want to make politics better in America. My opinion is you figure out a way to get the money out of it. You say that everybody can, anybody on the face of the planet can give $100 to a campaign, but nobody can give more than that. Some regulation like that, because it really does affect it. There is no way that somebody's given you over $200,000 collectively to the council, and the council's not listening to them. And I got to tell you also, I was all the way through college and long there afterwards, my girlfriend was a hairdresser. So I tip everybody. She trained me to tip. Mm-hmm. But I think I can't stress enough how much what Reverend Hagler said is true, that we heard from all these tip workers who work in bars and restaurants, but we didn't hear from any parking lot attendants, any service employees, any bussers, any bar backs, any of those people. We didn't hear from any of those people. And those are the people that are most dramatically affected by this, I think.
Is the service industry union involved in this?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Only to some degree.
Reverend?
Only to some degree. In some places, there's unions that are involved, such as would be the restaurants and the unionized hotels, for example. They may be unionized. Only some parking lots would be unionized. But by and large, you're talking about a sector that is non-union, a sector that is basically independent people.
And you would be surprised, Maria, that Washington, which is the District of Columbia, which is solidly Democrat, there are a lot of businesses in the District of Columbia that are not unionized. You may know that I ran a consulting firm for 25 years. We did political consulting, but mostly what we did was direct mail. There are only a handful of union printers, for example, in Washington, D.C. In Philadelphia, you can't find a shop that's not a union shop. In D.C., out of 100 print shops when I did business, there were maybe four or five. So there are a lot of industries in D.C., believe it or not, that are not unionized.
That's really interesting to me, because the SEIU is really active in California.
Yeah.
In fact, they're going to D.C. to register their complaint about Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
And obviously the international headquarters is here. There's some organizing that the SEIU has done, particularly with a lot of the tip wage workers at the airports, trying to get them organized and represented. And that's been an uphill battle because it's largely immigrant groups from Ethiopia and places like that. And even though those groups have really come together and understand the issue and are working with each other, it is still an uphill battle because you're dealing with transnational corporations that are vendors for the airlines that hire these people.
Yeah, and you know, they're all the major unions have headquarters here in Washington. Not all, but many of them. And it used to be a problem for my business because we only use union labor. We didn't use any other kind of labor. Union printers, union print shops, union. And sometimes we worked a lot with unions, and sometimes we couldn't find union vendors. We really had to bend over backwards. We had to do signs one time for the Carpenters Union, and we couldn't find a sign printer in the whole metropolitan area who was a union shop. We finally found people that do neon signs who were members of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW, and we got them to print the signs and put their logo on it. And you know, I had people from the Carpenters Union walk up to me and say, "Why are you putting the IBEW bug on a sign that's obviously screen printed?" And we said, "Because they did it. They were willing to do it for us, and they were the only union vendor we could find."
Right.
Wow. So, yeah. So that's. Well, Reverend, I mean, I think we walk in step on this whole thing, even though we were on different sides. I think that should say a lot, that we both believe that this legislation should move forth as the vendors, as the voters passed it. You said in the Washington Post, we should not tolerate this under any circumstances, and I absolutely agree with you. We shouldn't tolerate this kind of behavior from our legislators under any circumstances. You know, the voter rules supreme in a democracy, and we've gotten a lot of feedback. When I sent out the e-blast about you for the show, Reverend, we've gotten a lot of feedback from people who have said nay, 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 but I don't see any of them calling in. So I don't know what that is.
Has your media weighed in on this, your talk radio programs and your local channels?
The Washington Post certainly has. They're on the opposite side of Reverend Hagler.
Are they really?
Oh, yeah.
What is their justification?
Bad legislation.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't like the outcome, then you go and change it? I don't get that at all.
Right. Oh, look, we have a caller. We have a caller that I think both the Reverend and Maria and I know. Taboo's online, too.
Taboo.
Taboo has to say. Taboo, are you with us?
I'm here. Yeah. How's everyone?
Good, Taboo. How are you?
I'd like to ask a question first, and I think it might identify the problem. And you've heard me ask the question before, and I'd like to ask Reverend Hagler as well. Do we have corrupt government?
You know how
that's
I
a loaded
feel.
Question.
It's not loaded. Listen, because I'm concerned about solving the problem. If we are afraid, and you know what? Who was it? Jefferson talked about it. Well, we know if you're afraid to speak, then you don't have a true government. You know, what we are afraid to really call it like it is. Well, I will say yes, we do. And Reverend Hagler, I'd like to ask you, why would you support a group of immigrants who come, well, first I should ask you, do you support immigrants who come and undermine the workers in America? I'll tell you, for example, I worked in there. I was a member of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers for over 20 years. I worked at National Airport. We were undermined by the very people who now are trying to form a union and get the wages that we had fought for years. I told them, in all honesty, they deserve support, but I told them I can't support them because they were the strike breakers and put us out of work. And they created this problem back, 30 years ago. So the question is, if you don't want to answer, I say we have corrupt government until we are able to stand up and face the problem. We know darn well, as Reverend Hagler, as you so eloquently mentioned, the fact about these multinational corporations all over, it's about supply and demand. As long as you have somebody that will replace or would work for less than another, You can do that. When you don't have borders, this is what you have. And this is why people elected Donald Trump to stop this stuff. You have major corporations like, let's just go back to the government, the senior executive services, you know. Then you got major corporate circle. Let us begin to identify the problems. Because, gentlemen, I thank both of you. You all do great work. But we have to be honest with ourselves and identify the problem. And sometimes we are the problem.
But let me say this, because I think that, you know, the sector of work that you're talking about is not the sector of work that I'm working in when I talk about the airports. I'm talking about basically airlines numbers of years ago decided that they could get rid of the services of baggage carriers and get rid of the service of wheelchair pushers and basically brought in vendors to take over that and basically say to the vendors, we give you this lump sum of money. You deliver the services for us. We don't care how you deliver the services. This is all the money that's on the table, and these folks have no relationship whatsoever with the airlines, and therefore they're not our employees, they're yours. And basically that is how it's taken place. So to be turn around and to sort of really point fingers at immigrants is the wrong place to be pointing fingers, because it's really the greed of these corporations that create the scenario of exploitation and really in terms of manipulating people. Now, I happen to believe, you know, that America is a country of immigrants, whether you came here by force or you came here by your own umption. But the reality is that all of us, except for the Native American population, is from someplace else. And in that, I think that from my perspective, I have to take on a faith perspective in this. My faith perspective says that this country has been made strong by the different people that have come here. By their ingenuity and their sense of industry have come here. That's what's made the country strong. So it's really a country that has been made strong and not weaker on immigration. I think we are right now as a country under this tenant in the White House is literally making the country weaker, more afraid. There will be less innovation if we go down this road, because people who come to, in a sense, to make a mark in the U.S., bring with them all kinds of innovation and all kinds of creativity.
Well, may I ask one thing?
Wait a second.
And yes, the government is corrupt.
Let me just say something quickly, Tapu. I agree 100% with what the Reverend just said, and you know, as a person that has a strong belief in God, I feel the same way. You know, people are people, and America was built on immigration. I work with Native Americans all the time. I train them to run for public office, and I can tell you, their attitude is we're all immigrants, you know, and maybe we should all go back to where we came. But this is a country of immigrants, and you know, I wish if the Reverend doesn't mind, I wish he would tell us about his experience in Smithfield, Virginia, where he saw Latino workers, Mexicans, I think, and black workers pitted against each other. And he resolved a serious problem down there. And I think that the lesson that he brought from that was that it's in the best interest of business to keep us apart and to keep us at each other rather than get us together. And Reverend, could you talk about that for a moment?
But could you, but please, before you do that, let's correct something about the immigrants. This is not a country of immigrants. Let's please discuss that before you go there. This country started in, what, 1776. You think in terms of the natives who were always here, the Europeans that came in, what, 1607? Well, it's the English-speaking. Then the African came in 1619. This country started, what, 1776? That's 157 years that you had a new people mixing and building this. Now, this country started in 1776. These people were already here who established this government. And for you all to stand and talk about this as a nation of immigrants, it's an insult to our country. And I'm sorry to say that. I think the world of both of you, but you are wrong.
Well, you know what? I got to tell you.
I'm not sure what your historical framework is.
If you're ignoring the Irish immigration and the Italians and the Poles and all the groups that came from Europe in droves that really populated this country over a handful of people from Europe that started this country, and the slaves who were brought here against their will, you're ignoring the facts. The fact is...
No, that's just what I said. I said we had been here, I said we'd been here 157 years working together and built it. We had been here. We didn't come here. There were people who were coming. We evolved.
A handful of us. The majority of us came over through the potato famine and the terrible...
Now you're getting at the problem. See, now you're getting at the problem. It is always immigrants who've come here and push the people who started this country because it's out of our place. As the Constitution states, it's for ourselves and our posterity. It wasn't for immigrants.
The folks who started the country were landowners who were appointed by the king and given tracts of land by the king, and brought in slaves in order to work that land, and made sure that the average people could not vote. So the next leg of thing that happened after basically landed people could vote was to finally folks wrested that over so that white males could vote. And white males...
Well, people were already here.
It doesn't matter. The people who could vote, because America is predicated upon exploitation. Its history is a history of exploitation, exploiting every single wave of immigrant group that's ever come into the country. Andrew Jackson was involved in the Indian Removal Act to open up new slave territory. I mean, it's always been built upon exploitation of other group and folks.
We're getting off the subject here.
I mean, we appreciate your opinion.
No, the subject is immigrants.
Well, the subject is Initiative 77.
I noticed nobody made a comment about legal immigration.
That's where I was originally going to go.
My grandparents went through Ellis Island. I have their documentation. Yes, we were built on legal immigration.
Except for the slums.
And I need to add also illegal immigration because I lived in Boston for years.
Well, Reverend Hagler, that's the problem that I find when you support the slaves weren't asked whether they wanted to come or not.
Right. They were brought. But thanks, Tapu. Thanks a million for your insight. You're always a great person.
Well, can I say one thing, please, before I go?
One thing more. Go ahead.
It's corrupt government. It's all these policies that you're talking about. It's people that allow that. And both of you all mentioned God, and I think you believe in God. Well, let's look at one thing, and I think to both of you, the hosts, I think you're Catholic, and I think Reverend Hagler, you're not. But let's look at do reptilians exist?
I don't get it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
No way. The reason I'm asking, you're Catholic, right, Senator Brown?
No, actually, I'm Episcopal, but I was raised a Catholic. My grandmother would have called Episcopalians Catholic light.
That's exactly right.
I was raised a Catholic, but my wife and children did. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to leave with this. It's about who is influencing our government. We have corrupt government. We need to look at who's really controlling and influencing us. And thank you all. Have a good day.
Thank you, Tabu, and your wisdom.
So, I hear this, Reverend Hagler. I hear this from African Americans more than, you know, I hear it all the time. I used to hear it from my immigrant grandparents, which always surprised me. They didn't want other immigrants. They thought, please tell us about your experience in Smithfield, because I think there's such a lesson there.
Well, we set out to organize at the Smithfield Meatpacking Plant in Tar Heel, North Carolina. And there's roughly 6,000 employees split down the middle between Latino and between Black. And all of the management was lily white. And so we began to organize, and every time we would set up a committee, ICE would show up looking just for the Latinos on our committee. Now, you keep in mind, you got half the workforce there that's Latino, but they would just look for the folks who were organizing. So there was a collusion that was taking place between the company and ICE that they attempted to deport our folks every single time. one of the things that we said when we did our encounter group, we brought sort of an equal number of black folks together, an equal number of Latino workers together, and we made it safe space.
Well, you know, if you believe in statehood and you're out listening, please come to our event on October 12th. It's Dick Gregory's birthday, and those of you who know who Dick Gregory is, he was a great social activist and a stand-up comic. He broke through a lot of barriers. If we get Reverend Hagler back, maybe he can talk a little bit about Dick. I know he knew him. But we're going to have an event for our public interest. Thanks, Reverend. We'll get back to you in a second. We're going to have an event for our public interest group that we just started to fund statehood activities. And you get to come and see this magnificent play on the life of Dick Gregory that's at Arena Stage. And then we're going to have a reception and a birthday party afterwards for Dick. So,
because he passed away last August, just prior to his birthday in October. But October 12th is the anniversary of his real birthday. Yes. So it's not... And it's in conjunction with the play about Dick Gregory that is a function of Howard University and John Legend and William and Jada Pinkett Smith's foundation. Yes. And I'm also going to be there. And this is an opportunity for you to see a historic event as well as contribute to the DC for Statehood Fund, which is the only way you can get the tickets because they're sold out otherwise. So why don't you get them
on the site too? You know what? The tickets are $92 at just to see the play. And for $100, you can come to the play and the reception and meet members of the family. We hope that you'll be able to meet members of the cast. They've been invited. So please, please come. It's October 12th.
And all you need to
do, all you need to do is go to the website. Statehoodnow.org. It's for the benefit of Statehood Now Foundation. So you go to statehoodnow.org and you can buy tickets, and we hope you will. And you get to meet Maria. We're not even charging you extra for that. We should
you
be.
Get to meet the senator.
But I'm sorry, Reverend Hagler, your phone dropped you, and you were saying you organized people in Smithfield. And tell us what the end result was.
Well, let me take it apart, because we made safe space for people to meet. And so one of the things that we were doing in the process, we asked folks, particularly black folks, what have they heard about the Latino brothers and sisters? And the argument was that they're here to take our jobs, they're here to undercut our salaries, they don't like us, et cetera, et cetera. I said, fine. Who did you hear that from? They said, we heard that from management. Okay. And we asked the Latino folks who were in the room, said, what did you hear about black folks? Well, they're lazy. They don't want to work. They don't like Latinos. And I said, who did you hear that from? They said, well, management. And I said, oh, so both of you heard the same similar things from management. Why do you think that is? They thought about it a minute, and I could see the lights go on in people's heads. People say they want to keep us separated. And as a consequence, when we organized, we did a piece on Martin Luther King's holiday, which was the Martin Luther King Cesar Chavez event at a local church. And the company threatened anybody who would turn up to the service that they would be summarily fired. And they posted photographers outside the church so they could photograph anybody from the plant that went in. So as a consequence, nobody from the plant showed up for our Martin Luther King Cesar Chavez service, except there was a massive call-in, unorganized by anybody that I know, of people who just simply called in and said they were sick and couldn't come in. So the next year when we staged the Cesar Chavez Martin Luther King service, the plant gave everybody the day off in honor of Cesar Chavez and Martin Luther King. So they had gotten the message, and as a consequence, we successfully organized that plant.
Yeah, I know.
And when
was
this, Reverend?
This was maybe 5 years ago.
Wow, so this is recent.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, that people have to understand that businesses very often have a vested interest in keeping us apart. You know, I have a much more minor incident in my life where I was a top salesman when I was in college, a part-time salesman. And they came to me and they said to me, you know, we're looking for floaters. We hit the people I worked for had 50 stores. We're looking for floaters to go from store to store to store, and we'll pay you a little extra money if you're willing to work at a couple of stores rather than just the store you're working at. And I said, of course, you know, I need more money. So I went, and everywhere I went to three different stores. People absolutely hated me, and they attacked me, and I couldn't get it until one day I had made friends with one of them, and he said to me, oh, they came in the day before you started working, and they said anybody that didn't sell as much as you did got fired. So this is why everybody... Yeah, because it's in their best interest sometimes to, you know, to keep you at odds with each other so they can control you more easily. So, right. You know,
divide and conquer.
Divide
right?
and conquer.
That's right. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, Reverend, you know, obviously we've said what needs to be said, I think, about Initiative 77.
Except for what we haven't discussed is how it's going to unfold. What's the time frame? How is it going on the calendar? Is there anything anybody else can do?
Do you know about Reverend? Because I don't.
They'll have a first vote on, what is it, Wednesday, October, what is that, 3rd?
Or 2nd, yes.
I'm not sure, but it's the Wednesday. They're going to have the first vote, and of course they take two votes. So that first vote and the vote 2 weeks later. The issue becomes this, is that the chairman is basically saying we need to repeal it. The issue is we're saying respect the vote, which means that if you don't like it in its present form, negotiate with the proponents and the opponents and come up with a legislative piece that respects the will of the voter and modifies it in such a way that it is responsible and it honors what voters were saying. That's how you move forward with it. There's not a willingness to move forward with it, and right now, basically, the restaurant owners and the restaurant association feels no need to negotiate because they have full cover of the city council that says we're going to try to repeal it, and so there's no need to talk, which is a ridiculous place to be because you can obviously resolve this and maybe even resolve it more creatively while still honoring the vote, but under no circumstance should a vote be overturned.
Yeah. And you know what? If you're out there listening and you have an interest in this, if you're in Washington, even if you're not, but you care about democracy and you know, the democratic process, call these people. Call the people on the city council and tell them that you want at least to sit down and talk about this. I'm not sure really how I feel about that, but it's way better than just ignoring the fact that the voters have spoken on this. They really, you know, it's just horrible that they're willing to take this issue that's been on the ballot and, as you pointed out, Maria, has been vetted, gets on the ballot, and just decide now by executive fiat that they're going to do whatever the hell they want to do. So,
and there's no organizing or protesting or marching or any more public opinion that is available to be heard?
Well, you've got Reverend Hagler, and he certainly is, you know, I think, right, Reverend, organizing and
yeah,
working
keep your eyes open and your ears open.
Because we have Lynn on the line, too, that has a question.
Okay, good. Lynn, what's up?
Good.
Thanks for calling
Hello.
In.
I was just wondering about media psychology, you know, the VR programs that could actually be shifted to new media propaganda, because that's what it is anyway, that could be used for advertising on radios and TV to bring in the new age WPA for heart and based soul, you know, heart and soul-based community services, evolving consciousness, community services with a good basic guaranteed income with single payer for all. And that includes tiny houses for everyone, too.
Well, thanks for calling
thank you
in
for
with
your
that
comments,
comment. Yeah.
Lynn,
those
thank
are
you for listening.
Too many issues to address in the few minutes that we have left, but thanks for calling in with that, Lynn. So, Reverend, we only have a few minutes left. What is it that you want to say that we haven't talked about yet? Is there some comment you want to make?
One of the things is that we've been shopping around some compromises with the council in order to try to get a discussion going. And one of those things sort of moves in the direction of the voters, but it's a slower phase in time to give restaurants and owners opportunity and time to adjust themselves to be able to successfully meet the obligation. Well, the problem is that the Restaurant Association does not feel they need to be in discussion because the chairperson of the city council is giving them full protection from having to talk about it by basically saying that they're going to undermine the will of the voters. So that's one thing that is out there, and I know that at least one of the council members is trying to come up with a compromise. Whether that gets traction or not, we don't know at this point. But also, I need to also say that I've met with a number of our clergy groups, and our clergy groups are really up in arms right now about this idea of overturning the vote. I'm meeting with another clergy group in the morning, and I'm pretty sure that they'll be just as upset about this. And we're not just going to sit and make speeches. We're going to engage in some action that's going to challenge some of these people.
And you have to get more local media involved. I mean, this program is obviously a start, but I would think NPR would want to weigh in on this. I would think that your CNN, Fox, I mean, this is newsworthy. This is bigger than just the District of Columbia.
Correct. Yeah, I think you're right. But, and, you know, maybe people like Kojo Nandi, exactly, on NPR and could he's not on NPR, he's on regular public
WMAU.
Radio, but
yep.
WAMU, yes, thank you, American University. But we should get more people involved because this really is an issue that goes beyond just tipped restaurant employees.
Absolutely,
and tipped workers, even though that is at the corpus and is really what's important. There are other issues here that are important as well. So, absolutely get involved. And thank you for being with us, Reverend.
Yes, Reverend. A long day for you, too.
Yeah.
Thank you. And my prayers are with your mother and your family
thank you
as well.
That's sweet. Yeah.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you, Reverend. Let me tell you, I know this man personally. He's a great man. And
When we were trying to reconnect with you, Reverend, the senator mentioned that you did happen to know Mr. Gregory.
Oh, did you know Dick Gregory? I'm sure you did. Yes.
Could you speak a little bit about that and about him and your impressions?
Yeah. In fact, we go back a long way when I was doing a whole lot of organizing around criminal justice and political prisoners, and we used to run into each other on the road out there. And one thing that was always important was that Dick was always into the issues, knew what the issues were, knew who the players were out there. And a number of years ago, I had him come and speak at my church on a men's day, and he did one of those great jobs that sort of really stirred things up. And, you know, one of the things that Dick was very good at provoking you to think, making you think about an issue, making you think about in a place that you normally would not think about it. I mean, and he was very, very good at that, and was also very rooted, obviously, in terms of a lot of the movements and the causes. And he was very much an international person and a universal person in terms of the people that he embraced and the issues that he embraced. So he was someone I greatly admired and was thankful that he was in our world, and I wish he was here a little bit longer.
Well, absolutely, Reverend, and I agree with you 100% there, too. I didn't know him nearly as well as you did, but that's exactly the way I feel about him.
I hear the production is fantastic, too.
Fantastic. Getting great reviews. So come October 12th, statehood.org. Reverend Hagler, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you all very much for having me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. And now we're going to leave you. This is for Rachel and Ryan. I can't tell you how much Rachel Bernard means to me. So this song goes out to Rachel and Bernard, Rachel and Ryan, The Dixie Cups. It's a classic. We'll see you next week.
The Dixie Chicks.
No, the Dixie Cups.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yes, I go back. You forget, I go back way further than you,
this
Maria.
This is to me.
Yes, going to the Chapel of Love, the Dixie Cups. Go ahead.
Going to the chapel and we're gonna get married. Going to the chapel and we're gonna get married. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.